Our theme tonight is ZioCon Double Down, closed borders, open checkbooks, fees for our friends. Unfortunately, if you watch the State of the Union, you can see the neocons are back in full blossom. It's very dangerous and it's frightening. I keep watching central control and fascism get stronger and stronger, and I'm afraid it's going to keep getting stronger until we deal with it. The State of the Union was a culmination of several weeks of bad news on this front. The first was that there was a black budget provision in the stopgap funding. We just published our third in the series on U.S. statutes relating to federal financial management, and this one on the black budget. And let me just read a little bit of what we said. The excerpt is up on the website. Even in just the last few days, there have been concerns that the bill that ended the recent government shutdown included provisions allowing the executive branch to fund covert action without congressional oversight or going through the usual congressional oversight committees. The provision is currently a subject of debate with a potential amendment to remove the exception imposed by some in Congress. As it stands, this bill waives the later discussed, already very limited reporting and appropriation requirements of the National Security Act. It's not hard to see why it has raised more than a few eyebrows. Steps to change the language of the waiver reportedly blocked in Congress. With such a recent move towards limiting Congress's and the people's oversight in a situation already sparse on oversights, appropriation compliance, and reporting compliance, this time the time has never been better to ask, what is the black budget? How did it come to be? How does it work? And perhaps most importantly, how and why is it considered legal and constitutional? Anyway, so we have the administration asking for and Congress giving the right that appropriations for the black budget don't even have to be viewed and understood by the House and Senate Select Intelligence Committee, and that is absolutely frightening. The purpose that we envisioned for this series, and it's been a series of three special Sillery reports on the legal and financial, is not because I think most subscribers are going to be interested. These are really pieces that are to make it much easier for serious researchers, reporters, and lawyers to really understand the missing money issues. If we're going to come up with real ways of enforcing, we need to understand the law. Anyway, so those of you who are interested in that aspect of the missing money, I think you'll find it interesting, but please don't. Understand that this was really designed to help the reporting and researching community really get to the bottom of what's going on. My concern is that this push for these provisions is really to cover the tracks on the administration's failure to report to the House and Senate Select Committee both money and operations. And in fact, I think they're a lot more worried about keeping the operation secret and covering their tracks on not reporting those operations to the House and Senate than they are about the money. But in some sense, the operations, you know, they're integral to each other. If you report the money, people are going to say, what in the world are you spending all this money for? I also think this is a way of postponing, delaying, and that gives them time to recook the books. Clearly, I think if sort of what you're seeing in the feedback from the Department of Defense, it smacks to me that they need more time to cook the books, and that's exactly what they're doing. Now, in addition to the black budget stopgap funding change, which is temporary, we'll see what comes out the other side when they extend the stopgap funding. We see approval by the Congress with the request of the administration for NSA warrantless surveillance. We're seeing an enormous big deal made about the FISA memo and what the Obama administration was asking the court to do, whether it was telling the court the truth. We saw Bill Binney's excellent interview on what has come out from the FISA court. And then the question is, what is in the memo that we want to, that House Intelligence has voted to leak, that basically describes some of the outrages that are going on? But at the same time, let's be clear, the Congress just approved NSA warrantless surveillance, which would allow the NSA to do what we're all objecting to them doing in 2016, but now it would be legal. So it's, you know, that the NSA warrantless surveillance combined with what was in the stopgap funding for the black budget, you're basically talking about the black budget going and the national security state going completely out of control, both in terms of surveillance and financing, completely out of control. I mean, this is a real constitutional issue. Now, FISA memo, will it be published? The president has now ordered that it will be published tomorrow. We see Mueller ask for a delay in Flynn's sentencing. That's a very good sign because, as far as I'm concerned, the FBI behavior and conduct in his case is way outside the law and over the top. And it wouldn't surprise me if Mueller knows that now the case has no credibility, but we have to see the memo. It's wrong of me to speculate. Let's see what it really says. The State of the Union was a very interesting exercise. I got a chance to watch most of it. We turned it on a little bit late in the middle of dinner. I think the most important thing I saw during the State of the Union was the behavior of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Now, if you look at the protocol, the Joint Chiefs are not supposed to stand up, clap, make any faces. What they're supposed to do is watch the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, in this case, General Dumford, and just remain passive. And if he stands and claps, then they stand and clap, etc. But I have to say that their poker faces weren't very good, and there were several points at which they looked deeply frightened. And it's interesting because I think the Trump made an announcement that we're going ahead with the funding $1.5 trillion for the nuclear arsenal, of course, subject to congressional approval. I believe it was this issue that got Bannon kicked out of the White House and then destroyed. Now, he let himself get caught offside, so he was sloppy. But I think that there was real concern that Bannon was going to stop this $1.5 expenditure. I'm suspicious that it's not going to be just on the nuclear arsenal. I think we have nuclear bombs are a legacy technology, so it wouldn't surprise me if this $1.5 trillion is for something far more than nuclear. But it's a extraordinary, it's an extraordinary commitment to either have a war or pretend to have a war, including a nuclear war. And if you look at the Joint Chiefs' body language and face when Trump announced it, it sort of speaks many, many words. I also think, just from watching them, and I'm guessing, that the last thing, I just think they think we're talking too tough and picking fights where we don't need to. And it looks to me like they don't trust Trump. They just think he's too temperamental, is my guess. Whatever it is, it's not a good sign. And I would, if you're interested, I would encourage you to go back and see what you think of their body language. I'm open to input on this topic, but for somebody who was really engineered into the White House with the support of the military, it did not look warm and fuzzy. One of the quotes that I keep using, I used it in the annual wrap-up from Bannon, and I think it expresses, what caused him to really get worked over. He, President Trump, criticizes the Russians all the time. He knows the Russians are not good guys. We should be focused on how we bring the Cold War to an end so that we don't have to. And I think it was President Obama's program, $1 trillion to upgrade the nuclear arsenal. Is that what you want to do? Is that where you want to spend your money? Would you rather spend $1 trillion in Cleveland, in Baltimore, in the inner cities of this country, where we need to spend it in the heartland of this nation? And I think what he's trying to say is, in a world of anarchy, do you need another enemy? So Steve Bannon on why spending $1.5 trillion on the nuclear arsenal is not such a great idea. So the other thing I suspect the chief of staffs know, if you look at what has happened in both Northern and Southern California, I think it's the equivalent of a Phoenix program. We're basically moving population off the land so that the money coming back in and big investment can move in. It's kind of making America safe for Israel and the billionaires and big corporations. And whether the military is doing it or standing down, I think, just again reading the body language, there's no way that there are two choices. The military is involved, whether it's because they're doing it or they're standing down. There's no way anything like that happens in U.S. airspace without their without their doing one or the other. So now there's another question I have, which is, if you look at all the war talk, how much of this is a bluff for that provides air cover while we return as much capacity back into the United States, as well as return military? The military is very badly overextended. Special forces are badly overextended. So is this a bluff to preserve the reserve currency, talking tough while it covers our retreat? That's one possibility. Anyway, I think my big question is, Mattis is a pretty smart guy. How come he didn't stop this? There's a reason. So lots of unanswered questions around this 1.5 for the nuclear arsenal, but it's a serious matter. The other thing you see is, if you look at the cabinet sitting in the front row, you had the most powerful cabinet positions all sitting in the front row together, Tillerson, Mnuchin, Mattis. And there's no doubt to me from watching the body language that the most powerful guy in that room was not the president, it was Mattis. He seems to be the most trusted person in the cabinet by the other cabinet members. Anyway, so the military has been Trump's base, and the question is, why are they looking so scared? Is it because they're headed in the wrong direction? Well, that brings me to the fact that the following day we had dozens, up to 70 congressmen, going to a retreat at Greenbrier in an Amtrak train. It was hit by a garbage truck, even though, given the roads were closed and you had a helicopter escort, that was impossible. If the train had derailed going 70 miles per hour, which it didn't, luckily it just came to a stop on the tracks. But if it had derailed at 70 miles per hour, many people would have died. You had not only scores of congressmen, so up to 70, I think, is the numbers I've seen, but some of them had their family along. And so you're talking about 100-plus dead or seriously injured people. It's highly unlikely to me that this was an accident. Can you get someone who's mind-controlled to drive a truck into a train going 70 miles per hour? Certainly you can. The driver was killed, and I think the second person in the truck was seriously injured. I mean, in theory, could it have been an accident? I think the chances are very small. But you look how dangerous it is now to be in the U.S. Congress. We have Steve Scalise almost murdered at the baseball game. If the security guard hadn't shot the gunman, many other people could have been killed. We've had Rand Paul attacked by his neighbor and with six broken ribs, and on and on. So, and now, literally, if the train had derailed, we could have scores and scores of dead Republican. Now, why did this happen? What is the pressure for? It wouldn't surprise me if part of this is to make sure you get a permanent authorization on not having to report the black budget extended for the stopgap funding. But there are other things going on there. Of course, there's the release of the memo. Apparently, a lot of the people in there were people who had voted for the release of the memo. The FBI and DOJ, numerous people in the FBI and DOJ could go to jail for what could come out on all of this. Then there's another push for the National ID database. Another question I have is, I think the operation in Las Vegas was very much an FBI operation, and we've seen 12 school shootings in the last 30 days as well. So the FBI operation is on the line, and who knows what might come out. We'll just have to see. As I said, I shouldn't be speculating. If you're interested, William Binney did a great interview on one of the FISA court's decisions related to this. So that is very interesting background for whatever comes out. But hopefully tomorrow we'll get to see the memo. Now, second thing I wanted to ask, and this dovetails with the State of the Union address, what in the world is up at HHS? First, we get rid of Tom Price on a travel issue, pretext. As far as I'm concerned, that's a pretext. Somebody's engineering him out. Then we swear in the former lobbyist for Lilly, who has lots of experience in managing HHS. That happens right after we come up with an exemption office, which gives everybody hope. It's the Office of Conscious and Religious Exemption. So hopefully that protects doctors who don't want to have to give vaccines and issues like that. But we swear in a Lilly lobbyist. The next first act of the former Lilly lobbyist is to fire the head of the CDC. In the meantime, we have Jeff Bezos, J.P. Morgan, and Warren Buffett announce a new healthcare policy and venture for their employees. They're going to use all their skills, knowledge, technology to radically re-engineer how their employees get healthcare, and they think they can bring the cost down dramatically. It's funny. It's finally the big corporations have decided they're sick of the intermediation by big corporations and financial institutions. So the Midianite thing is happening. You can count on it. But Trump announces in the State of the Union that he's going to bring about radically lower drug prices. Well, don't think those two announcements are separate. Those guys have been talking, and that's a plan. Now, the reality, this plan, if you have the White House and a couple of the big billionaires, this is basically the billionaire club deciding they're going to squeeze everybody else. This has the potential to be wildly disruptive, and make no mistake about it, whether it's employment, construction, facilities, real estate, pharmacies, including those pharmacies in Walmart and the grocery stores, the wild pumped up costs of healthcare has pumped up many aspects of the economy. So again, we're watching something very similar to the ring the bell on the Amazon deal. This can be wildly disruptive to the entire healthcare sector. Now, it's got to come, and ultimately, depending on how it spreads, it could be good. But Jason joins me later this evening to talk a little bit about what he's been studying in terms of technology. So it's simply a matter of time. So my attitude is bring it on. It could be good for everybody, but keep an eye on it, because you're going to start seeing explosive changes in how healthcare is delivered. So let's look at some of the other comments in the State of the Union address. There was $1.5 trillion announced for infrastructure. We've seen leaks of the possible design of this. It's leveraged with state and local and private money. My guess is their goal is to support the money in operations they're bringing back in. So after you firebomb Santa Rosa, then you bring in taxpayers' money to rebuild it so that it serves the corporations and it helps you create Silicon Valley North. The question is, will it have a negative or positive return on investment to taxpayers? I'm a skeptic. Watch out for fees for your friends. And this is, of course, why we don't want Congress scared that they're going to have their train derailed every time they turn around, or their neighbor jump them in their lawnmower, or somebody, shoot them and kill them at the congressional baseball game. There's no doubt the speech was politically successful for Trump and the Republicans. The most successful line was, Americans are dreamers too. And it was well deserved, because Americans have been drained and drained and drained, and given a vision of themselves which is dumbed down and stupid. And it's extremely painful. So I thought that was a very politically very effective line. It's clear from the speech that they're focused on getting the Mexican cartels out of the narcotics trafficking in this country. We saw for many years, and I think this was a Bush-Clinton partnership, the Mexican cartels sort of build out the drug networks with the help of, I believe, the Department of Justice, the FBI, the full weight of law enforcement. And that's part of what the Fast and Furious scandal was about. And there's no doubt that there is a tremendous effort underway to reverse engineer that. And frankly, it potentially can do a lot to make the United States a much safer place. Now, I don't think they're shutting down the drug markets. I think they're turning it back to the more traditional players. The Democrats had their State of the Union response by young Joe Kennedy, and it was a poor response because the Kennedy was also afraid to touch the real rail, or what I call the third rail. There was no facing the music on the on many of the serious issues. It was still dancing around in the official reality. Even worse, and I couldn't even finish it, was the libertarian Adam Kokesh, who clearly is, I assume he's working for the CIA, but he's a economic hitman and not a good one. And so he gave the line for the Libertarian Party, and the two of them were remarkably weak. There's no ability to kind of face or deal with a real deal. And then you had, I watched some of the commentary, they're still pushing an unbelievably tired, stupid Russian narrative, given where we are on the disclosures, on the Fusion GPS activities, as well as the FISA court, what's happened in the FISA court. It's just, you know, you just can't believe they're still pushing it. And then, of course, Bernie Sanders comes out and pushes the same thing. But it looks like he's doing everything he can to argue for nuclear war. So whether it's Trump and trying to argue for $1.5 trillion for the nuclear arsenal, or Bernie Sanders saying, "We, you know, the Russians are coming, and NBC, some of the world's worst commentators like Andrew Mitchell, again, pointing fingers at the Russians. It's almost as though the Ziocons are so dead set on having a nuclear war with Russia. It makes me very glad that we're going to talk with Saker next week, because I think it's really time for a discussion with Saker about this effort to, you know, from both Democratic and Republican side, to push for war. The latest Economist cover has a picture of sort of a Lockheed Bluebird with a big title, "Are You Ready for the Next War?" It just makes you want to tear your hair out. So the push for nuclear war with Russia is very serious. You know, the question is, do they want war? Do they just want the financial equivalent of war without the war? I don't know. You know, I wish we had other political parties which were really willing to stand up and talk about the real deal, whether it was why we don't need a nuclear war with Russia, and why we don't need to, you know, firebomb American neighborhoods and murder American people, whether it's with narcotics trafficking in the poor neighborhoods or now thermal warfare in the rich neighborhoods where we want to make way for Silicon Valley North. The reality is, you see a lot of excitement around the country, small business and big business, for what the tax reform is making possible. And there's no doubt that economic activity could jump tremendously. We even see one economist at the Atlanta Fed come out and say, no, it's not going to be 2% GNP, it's going to be 5% GNP, which would be quite amazing. The reality is that some Americans are going to pay a very high price for the rush of this investment and economic activity, which many of the people in Santa Rosa can tell you about. So I don't want you to be fooled by the social packaging of Betsy DeVos saying, you know, we're getting rid of Common Core, though I'm deeply happy about it, or having an office of conscious and religious exemption at HHS. The deeper news is everything that's happening on the black budget money, the black budget powers, all of the deep stuff, NSA surveillance, is going in the wrong direction. We're not cleaning the swamp. We're building out an ever more powerful national security state. And yes, a lot of people on the payola train are getting cut. But that's, as I said, because we're going to the next phase. So there's a reason the Joint Chiefs are afraid, and I want to know what it is. So anything you can do to help me figure it out, I would deeply appreciate. I would note Tom Shannon, the top career civil servant at the State Department, resigned the day after the speech. So Trump announces $1.5 trillion into the nuclear arsenal, and, you know, talks like he's ready to go to war, and then we have the senior State Department official with deep knowledge of dealing with Iran and Russia on nuclear issues resign at the age of 60. Not good. So expect the 2018 election to be more than interesting.